Hello and welcome back to another edition of Stampede Radio. I'm your host, Chris Blystone, and I'm joined, as always, by Jim Campbell and Chris Shepherd. Guys, how's it going?
Hey, Chris.
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good because I just got to watch the Colts whoop the Titans, and that is just one of my most favorite things to watch. And, you know, we're recording this. We don't usually do game wrap-ups quite this quickly, but we're going to do a game wrap up here because it's Thursday night. We'd normally be recording a podcast, and because it's Thursday night football, we're up late tonight and talk about this Colts victory, maybe the most complete victory of the season, and definitely a victory the Colts really needed, especially after a tough loss against Baltimore. So really a full team victory, exciting. We're going to dig into it, and definitely a good place to start our podcast after such a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it's always great to get a divisional win, especially against the Titans, and especially on primetime or in primetime. So it was a good night. A lot of fun to be a Colts fan today.
Yeah, I unfortunately have learned to kind of dread primetime games based off what we've seen in the past. And it was nice. Well, I mean, I still went in with that dread, not going to lie. but it was nice to come out of it. Thoroughly. I mean, it was a pretty thorough rebuke of the Titans in general, of all of their team, all three phases.
Yes, I enjoyed it, and we're definitely going to dig into all of that here in just a second. One thing I wanted to talk about, takeaways from Frank Reich after the game. And you know, final score 34-17, Colts win. And this is, again, Thursday night on the road. That's big, in the first of two divisional games against the Titans in the next 3 weeks, in the next 2 weeks, I guess. So really big for them. Frank Reich came into the post game and did say that the only injury coming out of this game is kind of a significant one. It's Kenny Moore. He's got a rib injury. They're going to be getting MRIs probably tomorrow and getting a look at him and seeing where he stands. TJ Carey came in and looked really good, but man, that's still a big loss if he has to miss any time, especially during this stretch. This is a tough stretch to lose any of your key defensive players, and Kenny Moore is one of the best on the Colts. So really hoping that comes back positive and that they don't have any kind of significant injury that's going to waylay him for any amount of time, but definitely something to keep an eye on in the next week.
Yeah, not good, but like you said, and we'll get into, I think TJ Carey did a pretty good job.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's jump right into it because this game looked very different. Let's go through first and just overarching takeaway from this game. We'll just kind of go around it before we dig into the deep stuff. What was your, Jim, what was your just main takeaway from this game? Something that you were really impressed by or that you feel like, really you came out of this game excited about?
Not to really just, once again, take the low hanging fruit, as we always say, but Nyheim Hines just continues to do more and more with this offense. And, we've been waiting to see who's going to step up. And while Taylor had some problems tonight, I think he had some really, really good moments. Man, Nyheim Hines was just on a tear. And you could literally put the guy anywhere and find some sort of production out of it. And I think that's going to be really useful going forward because when he's out there, you don't know exactly what he's going to do. And it's super helpful. And he really seems to be coming into his zone in this offense. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he was electric. I mean, he was the only guy who really seemed to be able to do a whole lot of anything for long stretches on the offense. 12 carries, 70 yards, averaged 5.8 yards a touch, and had a touchdown on the ground, but that wasn't the end of his production. He's got five receptions for 45 yards and a touchdown in the air, and man, they really needed that from him. and he just was getting something out of every time he touched the ball. There were several plays where it looked like he ought to lose yards or get very little, and he turned it into something more. And that was really exciting to see from him. We've been saying on this podcast, we've been saying at Stampede Blue, and many Colts fans have been saying they need to see more Nyheim Hines usage, because when he has played, when he's been used right, he's done well. And this was an example, I think, of Frank Reich using him the right way. And I think kind of deciding that they're going to use him until Tennessee figured out a way to stop him, and they never did.
No. And he averaged 5.8 yards a carry tonight, which is kind of insane on 12 carries.
Yeah, it's almost like the Titans defense isn't very good.
Oh yeah, I mean there's that. But like, I mean, they're absurdly bad, I guess. I just didn't realize how bad it was.
But Jordan Wilkins and Jonathan Taylor didn't average that either, so give him credit. He definitely, you know, made the most of his carries. What about you, Shepard? Well, what did you see? Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, it's okay. Just to be fair to Wilkins and to Jonathan Taylor, the one place the Titans are good at stopping the run is right up the middle. And it seemed like the only place they wanted those two guys to run was right up the middle. To be fair to those guys, you know, they ran right into maybe the only strength that defense has. If they would have tried to get them on the edge a little bit, I think both of them would have looked better. If we're just doing overall broad general takeaways from this game, I thought that the Colts looked good. I think the special teams went out and got them a win this week, and it can't really be overshadowed. The special teams was what turned this game around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you had special teams miscues by the Titans that obviously didn't really have anything to do with the Colts necessarily, but also great special teams plays by the Colts. And, you know, you have a bad punt that was really, I mean, you can give credit to the Colts getting pressure on the punter and I think maybe rushing the punt that forced that bad punt that kind of bailed out an offensive drive that the Colts had a really good drive, stalled out on the 1 yard line because, like you said, they decided they wanted to run the ball right up the middle on consecutive plays and ended up, you know, turning the ball over on downs and coming away with no points. And you see that. And honestly, I had this sick feeling when that happened that, man, this is the game right here. We've just seen momentum shift and now we're going to, you know, have Tennessee take this long drive back and give credit to the defense. The defense holds up, forces a punt, special teams makes a play, and the Colts are right back in it. So definitely a big day for special teams and really excited to get to see them show up because they've been good for a lot of the season. And then over the last couple of games, they've kind of been not bad, but they've sort of been a little bit of a non-factor.
Yeah, they've been good all year, and then like you said, the past couple of games they were kind of up and down, mostly down, and then they come out and they had a really good week this week, and like you said, the shank off the punter's foot, maybe that had something to do with him feeling pressure, or maybe it was just because a few weeks ago he was a FedEx driver. I don't know, but either way, I'm glad he played for the Titans tonight.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what a shank it was. I mean, we basically got a mulligan.
I mean, I was watching the official. I was watching the official run that down as he's trying to locate where it went out, and he just keeps going and keeps going. It's like, oh, this is terrible. I'm probably seen worse punts, but I feel like they've been at middle school football games.
And I don't want to take anything away from FedEx drivers. If we have anybody out there listening who is a FedEx driver, you do good work, but I'm not going to sign you for my favorite football team to be the punter. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do it. And the reason is this guy screwed it up for all FedEx drivers tonight. Very sorry.
Well, I assume that most FedEx drivers are not delivering their package to the doorstep by way of a punt. If they are, a 20-yard punt ought to be enough. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, how long's your driveway? God.
Yeah. So for me, the big takeaway, was that Matt Eberflus is not going to be on the Colts coaching staff next year. He is going to be a head coach of a football team if he wants to be. Man, he's just got this defense frothy, and this is a very good offense. I mean, say what you want to about the Titans defense, but their offense is talented, and the Colts defense just managed to be smothering. And I mean, this is several weeks in a row that we've seen the defense. I mean, really, the only reason that the Titans even did as well as they did was because there were some defensive miscues, lots of defensive penalties, I think a little bit on the soft side in many cases. There were definitely some questionable ones, especially later in the game. But there were some penalties that were earned. And you've still got these penalties from Rocky Sin where he's grabbing the jersey, and that's going to get called every time. I mean, you can get away with some hand fighting and stuff a lot of times, but if you're pulling on the jersey and you're behind somebody, they're going to call that for pass interference every time. And stuff like that they've got to clean up. But really, man, this defense has just been so good against some really good defense or really good offenses. It's not like they're wilting. I feel like that was a sort of a trait of this defense last year prior to Buckner, that they kind of wilted against really good offenses. And that's not the case this year. They've played two good offenses in 2 weeks, and they've handled them. So really excited about this defense, but unfortunately not as excited about the prospect that Matt Eberflus may be moving on in the offseason to take over a head coaching position somewhere, unless he decides he wants to stick around with this team, which would be awesome.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Agreed. No. All I was going to say is, yeah, it would, but you know.
I mean, if you have to go coach for the Texans or the Jets, maybe you just want to stay with the Colts for a while. I mean, if the options are those, do you really want to jump ship and go to either of those organizations? Because quite honestly, the Texans looks like they are priming themselves to be the Browns, and the Jets are the Jets maybe forever. I mean, they've talked about Adam Gase being part of their future plans, so maybe they're not even going to be looking for a coach in the offseason. I don't know. I mean, who knows? It's hard to say what's going to be going on, but I mean, the Falcons would be a team that maybe would be a hard one not to look pretty hard at if you're Matt Eberflus. So, all right.
I mean, it's kind of incredible. It's just weird, you know, and I don't know, we've said this stuff, but it's this weird place to be as a Colts fan and just like, oh no, defense has got this.
Like, very.
We got so conditioned over the last decade so many times and just shuddering when the defense got on the field. And like tonight, my concern going into the game wasn't our defense. I thought it was going to be ultimately our offense not giving our defense a chance and you know, and sputtering out at some point, and then Derrick Henry just wearing us down over time. Like, that was my biggest fear. And for a moment there, I was like, well, that's probably going to happen.
I
was very wrong about that.
And to be honest, the Colts did not start. So let's kind of jump into this game. The Colts didn't really start this game playing like we wanted them to play. I mean, it was kind of a slow start for this team. Defensively, I mean, they didn't exactly light it up out of the gate. You're seeing the Titans move the ball effectively. And, you know, they move the ball down the field. They score a touchdown. They were doing these, and they kind of went away from it. They did it on a couple of plays, but they were doing these rollouts where they've got the running back. They're like motioning, or they're putting some, like the line is blocking to the left, and Tannehill is rolling out to the right on a bootleg pass to the running back, and basically getting a step on you know, Bobby Okereke is kind of playing catch up. They did it on a couple of times, I think, on that first drive, or at least on the first couple drives, and it kind of looked like, man, are they going to do this to this team and kind of use the Colts' speed against them? And they did it a couple times. I didn't see them do it again after that, that I can recall. Maybe they did, but I don't remember. Or maybe the Colts just sniffed it out after that point and it was not effective. But I only remember on that first drive or two. And it kind of looked like they were going to roll a little bit. They looked like the better offense for sure. The Colts offense kind of sputtered and didn't really they just didn't look ready to me they looked like they were going to struggle, and so I was a little bit worried to start this game, to be honest with you, because it was just, it kind of looked like the Colts team that we've seen against consistent teams, because my biggest concern with the Titans as far as their offense was the offenses we've struggled with have not been explosive offenses per se, but have they been efficient ones, offenses that don't make mistakes and can drive down the field and score, and that's the Titans, and that's what they looked like out of the gate, so I was a little concerned.
Yeah, so you know, early on, like you said, they were running a lot of the play action boots. They I talked about it in the scouting report that I got out super late this week, because life is weird and the Colts played on Thursday. I got it out today, so if nobody saw it, I get it. But a lot of what teams like the Titans and teams like the Browns, the Vikings, the Jaguars, all these teams run very similar offenses. So the Colts have seen it multiple times this year, where they live and die basically based off of that outside zone play going to their running back, in this case, Derrick Henry, who's really good at it. And so it's super effective for them because, you know, you get the offensive line moving one way. If you fake the handoff, like you said, the whole defense is flowing that way. You've got the quarterback just running by himself on a naked bootleg. And, you know, if they've taken away your downfield throwing options, usually you've got that short option, like you talked about, in this case, the fullback, you know, running in the flat. You just pitch it to him and you get a nice gain out of that. And so for me, even though early on they were moving the ball, the defense showed really great growth from even against the Browns. When they played the Browns, Baker Mayfield tore them up on that and they really didn't have an answer for it. And it started off that way tonight, but they adjusted to it. And they did run more naked boots kind of out. I think Denico Autry had a sack off of one of those attempted naked boots. And also Kenny Moore, they timed up a blitz perfectly for Kenny Moore. And he came screaming off the edge, and you may not have caught it just because Ryan Tannehill had nowhere to go. He had to get rid of the ball, but that was a designed naked boot. And he just couldn't get outside. So the Colts adjusted to it great, but yeah, like you said, they started off slow and, you know, I don't know how far you want to get, but the Colts didn't lead this game until well into the third quarter.
Well, I mean, and they their first possession, they go for it on the first of, I can't remember how many, five or six, fourth and short, where Frank Reich just, he was doing his best Riverboat Ron impression, and was just going to go for it. And he's proven willing to do that. And they miss on it. They go up the middle with Jordan Wilkins, sort of a theme here. When they go up the middle, they didn't do great. I mean, they were okay. Taylor did make it a couple times, but they go up the middle. They don't get it. But in sort of typical fashion, they kind of set the tone on that next possession because, man, you have the very first play when the Titans get the ball is Julian Blackmon blowing Derrick Henry up for a 4-yard loss. Yeah. And he looked like he had been fired out of a cannon from the back of the defense. I mean, he just was there. And Julian Blackmon is not a big dude. And I mean, he's, when you get him, I guess if you get there that early, Derrick Henry doesn't have any time to build up a head of steam and you can take him down like that. But man, that was a great play. I don't think I saw a whole lot of Julian Blackmon throughout the rest of that game, but man, that was a big hallmark play, and he's having those consistently. If you're Chris Ballard, you have to feel really good about Julian Blackmon. And that was kind of a tone setter for that drive. Immediately put the Titans in a bad position. And man, would you have to? That's honestly, with this defense, if you get disadvantaged by a penalty or if you get a sack or anything like that, they're such a tough defense. You're not typically going to be able to get that back. It really makes it hard. And so starting out that possession, I mean, that's they end up they end up sending them three and out. Yeah, and then kind of that sets the tone and gets things back in it. So really nice, balanced start to the game, because in past games, it seems like you don't necessarily get one side or the other picking up the slack when the other side kind of lets things down a little bit. And so the very first drive, you've got the defense struggling and giving up a touchdown. And then the offense's response is, you know, to turn it over on downs, and that can sometimes spiral, and it definitely didn't in this game, and that was very encouraging.
Yeah, and I was kind of miffed at the gambling that was going on at first, especially coming out of all of that work out of the first quarter with only 3 points, kind of chapping me a little bit, but as we'll see, it really didn't matter all that much. So maybe that's just, not respecting your opponent. just like, yeah, we'll get this.
Well, fine. And the thing that I thought was interesting, and this is maybe something that should have been a takeaway for this game a little bit, is the Colts ran a lot of no huddle. They ran, and I mean, they were in no huddle. I would say the majority of the game they were running no huddle. Maybe not right away early, but they switched to it pretty quickly. And by the time they're in, in the second quarter and on, they're doing a lot of no huddle. They're doing a lot of up tempo offense, and they start getting Nyheim Hines involved in the game, and they start getting, maybe more importantly than Nyheim Hines, and sort of the guy who, because Nyheim Hines has had such a good game, you forget about a little bit. But Michael Pittman Jr. had a fantastic game. This was his coming out party here for the Colts, because he looked pretty good last week, but he looked even better this week. He had, I think he broke 100 yards. Let's see. He had 21 yard rush, which he looked great on. And then he's got 7 catches for 101 yards. He looked exactly like what they need him to be. If he can do that. And even like, it's one of those things. And this is a bad comparison because he's nothing like him, but they need him to be sort of that Reggie Wayne type of character. Who Reggie was never the flashy receiver. There was not any time that we're going to see Reggie Wayne on the field and think he's the flashy guy. He was just reliable. He was going to catch the ball. He was going to get the first down. He was going to be in the spot he needed to be in. And unlike somebody like T.Y. who really needs to beat their man, he could go up and get the ball if he needed to. He could do those things. Pittman, I think, could be something like that for the Colts. I'm not saying he's going to be Reggie Wayne, but I think he could be that kind of player who can just make big plays when they need him. Maybe he's not going to be the most explosive player on the offense, although he showed that he can, make some explosive plays. But man, if he can consistently be a weapon for them, that changes the way this offense can work. And they've needed that in terms of a receiver. Phillip Rivers hasn't really looked his way a lot. And so having a big game like this, I think, is going to come up big down the stretch for the Colts, because they need this. I mean, he's a 6'4", 225 pound receiver. It would be a huge benefit if he could start getting looks from Rivers and start, becoming a major factor in the offense. He led the receivers. He led. Did he have... Let's see what his yards for scrimmage were. He beats out Nyheim Hines for yards from scrimmage. He was the top guy. Unless my math at 12:06 is off. He had a really big game. And yeah, it really just, it was an exciting game for the rookie. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that he kind of did that all throughout the game. It snuck up on you a little bit because they were in pretty good chunks. But here, I mean, in the first quarter, he's got a couple catches for 12 yards. Second quarter, he's got another catch for 30. And he's got then in the third quarter, he gets that 21-yard rush around on the end around. And he really, I mean, he didn't look fast, but he's big enough that his speed, I thought, for a guy his size, was totally fine. He broke some tackles, moved the ball well downfield. He looked angry that he didn't get into the end zone on a couple different plays where he was really close, but he'll get there, because if he continues to play like that, he's gonna get there. But I was really excited to see that performance out of him today.
Yeah, it's always encouraging, especially for a team that's really needed someone to step up at the receiver position. And, you know, having an early second round pick, somebody that the Colts, you know, definitely believed in, seeing him go out and have a big game, it's huge. And hopefully it's a sign of things to come.
Yeah, definitely. And so then in the second quarter, if you look, I mean, you've got, looks like 21 plays. The Colts have 21 plays in the second quarter and really just kind of take off at that point. They get things close, you know, at halftime, they end up settling for a field goal, really almost don't get that field goal because they have a terrible sack at the very end of the half. And, you know, thankfully they're able to spike the ball with a second left on the clock. But they managed to get the game close and they, you know, go into half at 13-17 and are going to get the ball back to start the second half. So, really, I think they got the ball back with just under 3 minutes left in the second half and had an opportunity to kind of run a 2 minute drill, and they moved the offense pretty well. And then kind of same deal that they've struggled with all year long, struggle when they get to the red zone. And props to, I want to say Rigoberto, but I believe Rodrigo Blankenship, man, I hate that our kickers' names are so similar, but Blankenship, you know, he's looked good. He's had some misses, but man, it's nice not to have to worry as much about the kicker. I mean, he has been good, as a whole. He's been a really good kicker as a rookie. So, nice that he came through.
I was shocked to hear that Gostkowski has missed 8.
Well, he missed like half of them in the first game. I mean, he missed so many kicks in their very, I think it was their first week. He missed 4 kicks. And then he kicked the game winner.
He missed one against the Steelers that would have sent them into overtime. He missed it as time expired. I want to say it was a longer field goal, but it was definitely one an NFL kicker should be able to hit. And I think that game ended up being 27-24 because of that field goal.
I mean, he drilled that 50 yarder earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just like with ease, like, oh, so when he walked out for what that was today, like 44 yarder, like, ah, he's probably got this. He's a professional. Well,
honestly, I made my score prediction for this game. I had the Colts winning 24-20. And the reason is because I expected him to miss an extra point because he's been so bad and so inconsistent as a kicker. I just thought that's the point. That's the reason that point total finishes that way, not because of field goals, but because the Titans are going to end up missing an extra point because their kicker has been so bad. And he did miss a kick, but I believe it was a field goal. So, just killer issues with special teams were definitely a problem. But man, it was really like it was cool to see the offense humming enough that they could run an effective 2 minute drill and go down and get points on the board. That is something, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this year, but it does seem like more than in the last couple of years, Frank Reich is trying to get those points before the half when they're going to get the ball back. That drove me nuts with Chuck Pagano. That was never a thing that they focused on. I don't feel like they really did it a whole lot last year or the year before. But man, it seems like it's been a focus of the offense to get down there and get points, and kind of give them the chance to double dip a little bit, when they have the ball coming back to them in the second half.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of that is just a difference. I mean, obviously in philosophy, but in the difference between having an offensive-minded head coach and a defensive-minded head coach. A defensive-minded head coach, by and large, for the most part, those guys are going to be more conservative. They're not going to want to push the ball as much. They're going to want to try to protect the ball, hold on to it, ball control, win the game. Frank Reich, you know, obviously he wants to limit turnovers, but as an offensive guy, you know, if Phillip Rivers throws an interception here or there, especially if they're going down to try to get points before halftime, you know, that's one of those things I think Frank Reich lives with. He'd rather be aggressive and you know, die trying to be aggressive than, you know, die because you didn't take chances when you had them. So I think that's just kind of a difference you see a lot between offensive and defensive head coaches. And on that 2 minute drive, well, the 2 minute, 3 minute, whatever it was. There was a huge play to DeMichael Harris. And it was Philip Rivers just launched the ball up to this undrafted rookie wearing number 12, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know how you look at that. But it was a tough ball to catch, and that rookie went up and made a play and brought the ball down for I think it was 20, 21 yards or something like that. So it was a huge play, and really that explosive play kind of got the Colts down into scoring position to set everything up. So, it was nice to see them go to anyone for an explosive play in a 2 minute drive. And it just so happened it was the undrafted rookie.
Yeah, and that's the second time, well, not really just even the second time, it's consistently now in the games that he's played, he's had big plays, and that's more than you could hope for somebody coming in off the practice squad. I mean, the Colts have something with this guy. I mean, he's got speed. They were saying on the, I can't remember if it was Troy or I don't know who said it, but it's one of the announcers were talking about him being the fastest guy on the team, which I think Nyheim Hines might be offended by. But if
there's a lot of fast guys.
Yeah, if he's comparable, I mean, you've got Isaiah Rodgers, who probably would take issue with that as well. I think there's several people who might want to vie for that as a title that they hold themselves. But I mean, he has made plays. He's been a consistent weapon. He's something that the Colts have been able to utilize. And even if he doesn't make a huge impact on the stat line, he's somebody you have to account for because he's shown he'll make plays. You get the ball to him, he'll make something happen, and he can make catches that are tough. And it was a really impressive catch. I'm excited to see them use him more, or at least work him in the way that they have. I don't know that they necessarily need to have him have a dramatically greater involvement, but he definitely, it's exciting. He adds an element that they don't necessarily have. All right. And then, so then if we look in this second half, we open up with this massive drive. The Colts get the ball to start the third quarter, and all that they do is basically eat half of the third quarter on their first drive. Mm-hmm. They go no huddle, and normally you would think that might make things go faster, but because they throw so many short passes, they go no huddle, and they still manage to just have this long grinding drive. And this is the one that's a little frustrating because it is such a long drive. You have literally a 7.5 minute drive that ends in ostensibly a touchdown pass to Zach Pascal. On review, it gets reversed. He doesn't break the plane. His hip is down or something before he gets across the plane. And so then they do this awful Jonathan Taylor 1 yard attempt, and then Jordan Wilkins 1 yard attempt right up the middle. And both of them are as ineffective as the one before. And so then they come away turning it over on downs. And that was a little bit demoralizing. But I don't know about you guys. My first thought was, I don't hate them going for it on fourth and one, fourth and goal from the one. And the reason is we have two safeties this year from that spot, and the defense was getting consistent pressure already. I feel like they ramped that up in the second half, but in the first half, they were already getting pretty good pressure on Tannehill, and they were not letting the run really go wild. And so I don't totally hate you doing that, because if you make it, obviously points. If you don't, your defense is such that you have a good opportunity at maybe getting a safety and making a big game-changing play. So I was frustrated. It was a little bit of a thing where I thought, man, I hope this is not a turning point where we really just kind of get left behind because of this long grinding drive that results in nothing. But it's one of those things that you don't hate because of the talent on the defense.
Yeah, and I thought going for it was the right call. I didn't necessarily like the play call at all. But with that said, I do understand why you call that there. Even though you're running into the strength of the Titans defense, you believe that you've got Quentin Nelson, a top 10 pick as a guard. You've got a first round center And, you know, Glowinski, you know, he wasn't a high draft pick, but he's good moving people in the run game. You know, you've got Anthony Costanzo, who you believe in. You know, you've got these guys up front that can really move people. And even if you're running into the strength of the defense, if you punch that in on fourth and one, running at their best players, the two guys who are worth something on their defense, if you can punch that in, it is demoralizing, and you are breaking the will of the guys lining up on the other side of you. The only problem is that the Colts had no success running with a running back up the middle all game. So I get why you try to do it. I still don't like the fact that they did try to do that. Run it outside, pitch it, throw it, do something other than what they did there. But you know, I do still like the call to go for it on fourth and goal. And like you said, it did set up the defense to, you know, make them have to go 99 yards. I'm just glad Derrick Henry didn't have another 99 yard run against our Colts. I think when they got the ball back and that first handoff, he got a little bit of space, and I was thinking, oh no, oh, it's happening. And fortunately we tackled him, but you know, for about a split second, I was very scared it was going to happen again.
What's incredible is who tackled him. If you remember, it was Grover Stewart that ran him down, and mm-hmm. that's somebody whose name we haven't said yet, and we should have, because he had an excellent game in total, but really the first half. I mean, he had an excellent sack that was wiped away by a penalty. But I remember that play very vividly. That, like you said, it looks like it could get away, and then here's this 315-pound man who runs him down and takes him down after 5 yards, and it's like, this is a different team than it's been in years past, because we've watched that happen before and just been this game-breaking play. And that just doesn't happen to this Colts team.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's nice to see.
Definitely. And then so we get on their next drive, we get another big play from a guy who's had a lot of them this year. Danico Autry gets his sixth sack of the season on this drive for the Titans. And that basically ends their drive. They end up with a fourth and long. It's a 10-yard sack on third and one to force fourth and 11 and a punt. And man, Danico Autry has just looked so good. I mean, he really, if anybody has benefited more from DeForest Buckner's presence, I don't know who it is. It certainly isn't Ben Banigou, right, Jim?
Unfortunately. We didn't get stuck by the Banigou curse again today, like I expected we would, since he was inactive today. Healthy scratch even, right?
So, yeah. Disappointing, yeah. But Danico Autry sure hasn't been, because, I mean, he's had some great plays, and yeah, six sacks at this point in the season, which I don't know offhand, I don't have it in front of me, but I feel like maybe a career best for him.
Mm-mm, no, he had 9 1 year.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, I have a feeling he may be on track to break that record for himself this year.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think he's definitely on pace. So on that sack, that's another play-action rollout. So Tannehill was trying to get outside and trying to go on that boot. So what Autry did, Autry sold out for the pass rush. If that ball would have been handed off the backside, so cutting to the backside of that run would have been wide open, because Autry wasn't there to set that edge. So, and you know, I think that was probably a calculated move from, you know, the Colts coaching staff, where they said, hey, you know, looking at it, if this happens, you've got to go get the quarterback. We can't worry about that backside edge. If it happens, it happens. And you know, it ended up paying off big there. You know, obviously you don't want to give up a big run, but you know, sometimes you've got to take a risk, and that's what the Colts did there.
Well, and that is followed up by, I didn't know that it was this short, but seeing it on paper is even worse. The 17-yard punt to the Tennessee 27-yard line, which is definitely the worst punt that I've ever seen, and I didn't realize it was that bad until I actually read that stat line on here.
His first two punts went for 17 yards and a Colts touchdown. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's not ideal. That's not really how you want things to go. And they, like I said, they got pressure. It was maybe rushed, but regardless, man, 17 yards is like, no, that's not what you want. And so it's pretty good field position. Not a whole lot of work. They give Nyheim Hines the ball. for a short run, and then they do this the 21-yard end around to Michael Pittman, who really got almost in, and I know was probably irritated. But then they hand it off to Nyheim Hines off the edge, and he manages to get in for a touchdown.
That's right. Because they ran it off the edge. They didn't run him up the gut where the Titans are good.
They ran him behind Quentin Nelson. What do you know? That's effective.
Right, yeah.
Instead of trying to just run right behind Ryan Kelly. Not that there's an issue with Ryan Kelly, but that is not the A gap has not been kind to the Colts this year. So, yeah, I mean, they're in good position at that point. And it looks like, hey, this Colts offense didn't just leave after the half. I mean, they at this point, I was feeling pretty good just even about how the Colts were playing offensively. They seemed like a team that they weren't going to be shut down by this defense. You know, what were your thoughts at this point in the game? Because I honestly, even before they blocked this punt, I thought this game was kind of in hand for the Colts.
Seeing the defense response in this whole ordeal, every time I thought things were maybe turning for the worst, the defense stepped in and changed my mind about that. And I think in particular this time I was like, yeah, they're not going anywhere. I mean, how many – what percentage of the Titans – yardage came from Colts defensive penalties from like the second quarter on, because I feel like it was potentially a significant amount.
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. Hold on, I can find penalty information somewhere. It looks like the Colts were penalized for 73 total yards, and
I think
38 of that came in the first half. And it is about 50-50, so you get a decent chunk of yardage just from penalties for them.
And they only had 156. Wait, no, hold on. 138 in the second half.
Yeah.
So roughly 38 yards of that. I was kind of with you at that point. Like, I was starting to feel much better.
So the momentum had definitely shifted at that point. It felt like the Colts were in control, mostly because they went on the 7-minute drive just before that happened. They go on that 7-minute drive, you know, they turn the ball over, you know, on downs inside the one. They end up forcing a punt. The punt goes 17 yards, and it's like, oh, okay, everything is going the Colts' way right now, even though they didn't get points out of that last drive, they still just drove the ball down the field on this Titans defense. Now the Colts have another shot at it. It started to feel like it was going the Colts way. It felt like the Colts defense was going to be able to stop their offense. And if the Colts could just figure out how to punch one in, and then after they did punch it in, it's like, okay, you know, we've got it figured out. We know what we're doing. And it started to feel like it was going the right way.
And you could see the Titans defense was just gassed.
Yeah.
Especially right after that shake punt. I was like, oh man, that's bad, guys. Sorry.
Well, that was exactly what happened to the Colts last week against the Ravens. You get the defense suffers through this long drive. They make a play in the red zone to take the ball away, and then you have the interception, and you get to just do it right over again. And that is demoralizing for a defense. It wears you down. And this week, the Colts defense got to be fresh. I mean, they didn't have to be on the field nearly as much because the offense was effective. They haven't always been that way this season. And it was a big difference in this game that the defense was able to kind of be fresh. And as we talked about many times, you have special teams helping you out, which over the last couple of weeks, they haven't necessarily. So you're in good field position. Your defense is not on the field more than they need to be, and your offense is sustaining these long drives and then actually making plays when it counts. I mean, you get this next defensive drive where they force a three and out. And the thing that I don't understand, and this, Shepard, you maybe looked at this with your scouting report, I was a little surprised that they targeted their tight ends so much, especially on third downs. I mean, they've got some pretty good receivers, and it seemed like they kept targeting the tight ends. Maybe that was a, I mean, that might be credit to the Colts coverage, but I kind of expected them to go to their receivers a lot more. And you keep getting, I mean, how many times did we see Firkser are getting targeted on third downs or on these critical downs and not really doing anything with it? I mean, I guess the answer to that too is that how many times did they target? I'm blanking on the name, number 11,
AJ Brown,
who dropped the ball. I mean, on multiple different times. So I guess some credit goes to him for not being a bigger factor. There were a couple of times that did seem like there were misses where either the receiver dropped the ball or Ryan Tannehill missed on what should have been a really big play, and the Colts kind of lucked out in a couple of those spots. But it was a little strange to me that they went to their tight ends so frequently.
Yeah, so I would have to go back and watch the All-22, obviously, to be able to say for sure. But it was surprising to me also, not because their tight ends aren't good. I mean, Frisker's not great. But Jonnu Smith is a very athletically gifted tight end. We saw that on his end-around touchdown, that you don't hand the ball off to a tight end if he moves like Jack Doyle. You know, he's a good athlete, and he's a guy that can make plays in the open field if given the opportunity. But you know, he hasn't been given a huge workload. I want to say he's third or fourth on the team in receptions and yards, so he's not a bad player. But at the same time, if you go back and you look, I think the tight ends were probably your at least number two receiver, maybe their number one receiver in this game. And it was because a lot of it was because the Colts, they had to have been taking away Corey Davis and AJ Brown. And Corey Davis, he was taken with a fifth overall pick. He's really inconsistent. And I didn't watch enough film specifically on him to figure it out. He's super inconsistent. Some downs he looks like he was worthy of the top five pick, and other downs he's completely covered, he's blanketed, and he doesn't do anything. But he's very, very talented, and I think you saw that on one or two plays in the game. He made that great diving catch on the sideline. He ran a great route and beat Rocky Sin on the, you know, the kind of double move in the slant. But by and large, they took him out of the game other than those two plays. And then, you know, you mentioned A.J. Brown's drop. A.J. Brown is a problem. He is built like a running back, and I don't know what his 40 time was, but he plays like he's got legitimate 4.3 speed. He's really tough to tackle. He never goes down on first contact, and he can run away from everybody. So the fact that they limited his catches, and yeah, you know, the Colts got lucky with that one drop for sure. But really the rest of the game, he seemed pretty frustrated. I I'd have to go back and look at it, but I think a big credit is owed to the Colts secondary with what they were able to do to make the tight ends. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, he just hasn't thrown to his tight ends that often. I want to say Jonnu Smith's, I looked at it earlier. I would have to go back and look, but I want to say that he's getting like maybe two or three targets per game. And Frisker, he had, I want to say like five or six catches on the year coming into the game. I don't know for sure, but it was something like that. So the fact that he had to go to those guys as often as he did is a huge credit to the secondary.
Yeah. Well, and it's not the first time either, because they did really well. I mean, they played really well against Kenny Golladay and limited him in a big way. Yeah. And he didn't play the whole game, but to have limited him in the first half, I think he was 0-for-4. He was targeted. And they've done well against those receivers, and that's props to, you know, really all of the corners. We thought that was going to be a weakness on this team, and Xavier Rhodes has been a really good corner. And you know, has been a really, like, a great signing for Chris Ballard. Mm-hmm. And it's not been a liability at all. Now, some of that credit goes to when you're getting pressure from the defensive line, you're obviously going to make things easier on your corners. So, but really pretty impressed with what they were able to do. And then at this point we get the punt block. EJ Speed gets in there and looks like, I don't know if you guys watched the replay. I was thinking this. He looks like he takes that ball like right in the neck. I mean, I was just thinking like, props to him for blocking it. But do you not come off the field and just like, man, I wonder, you remember when Henry Anderson like fractured his larynx or whatever it was? Like, did EJ Speed have to go to the hospital for like taking a punt directly to the neck? I mean, again, I'm sure he's excited to make that play, but man, that was rough. And he makes the play. It's a touchdown. TJ Carey picks it up. And by the way, TJ Carey at that point had come in for Kenny Moore, who'd gone out and really looked good. So a guy that definitely deserves some highlights, because he was playing well, in place of Kenny Moore. But, you know, he picks up the ball, runs it in for a touchdown. I think that I saw that it was the first touchdown or first blocked punt for since 2017 for the Colts. So it's been a little while, but, definitely a big special teams play that kind of really puts the game not out of reach, but when you have a defense like the Colts do, it makes things really tough because you have to be more one-dimensional if you're an offense facing that kind of situation, and the Colts defense then can kind of go to work a little bit and it makes your life kind of miserable. So definitely a big shift and kind of a sigh of relief for me because I thought, okay, this game is probably out of reach at this point.
Yeah, at that point, it felt like that no matter what happened, the Colts were going to end up winning the game, even though it was only 10 points, just really based on what the Colts defense had put out there. I was a little concerned that they might be tired, but they, you know, I had faith that they were going to be able to get the job done.
Definitely. So looking at some of the stats here, just to run down a few of these things. So if we look, T.Y. Hilton was back in this game. He was he wasn't a huge factor, but he was not a non-factor in this game. 40 yards on 4 catches. Some of those pretty decent. He had one that he broke. He looked like he was down, and he ended up, I think, getting a first down on a play where he basically should have gotten a 3 or 4 yard completion. He looked like a valuable part of the team, even though if you were trying to figure whether he's worth the money he's being paid, you'd probably say no based on what we've seen so far this season. But I would say, it was cool to see him have that impact. He missed. He still does not have timing down with Phillip Rivers on the deep ball, which is a little frustrating. Because man, T.Y. Hilton catching the deep ball, there's just not anything prettier than that. And he has not been able to get that timing figured out at all this season.
Yeah, you know, at this point, you kind of have to wonder if that's even going to come. I think it was something that we all wanted to see, but, you know.
Well, and Rivers can't hit that deep ball with many people because he tried to hit it with Marcus Johnson and threw it directly into the hands of, I don't remember the corner, I believe it was Malcolm Butler, if I'm not mistaken, and he thankfully didn't get his toes in on what would have been a pick in the end zone. And it was not a good pass. This was maybe a game, and this is what another takeaway of mine, despite the offense playing pretty well, this is a game, and it was the first one I've noticed where I really felt like the lack of velocity on Phillip Rivers' passes is somewhat of a problem. Had we been playing better corners, I think there would have been a lot more contested catches on the outside balls because his throws to the boundary really just don't have any zip to them. And because the Titans were playing kind of soft coverage, that was okay. But it has me a little worried about teams that maybe have better corners.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you gotta account for that. And time will tell, because we are definitely going to play better corners.
Yep. That's coming up real soon.
Yeah, I was specifically thinking that Pittsburgh is going to make me very nervous. I'm so used to just getting blasted by Pittsburgh. We haven't had a competitive game against them in a very long time, and I'm not excited about that. But yeah, I mean, it was one of Phillip Rivers' better games. I mean, 29 of 39, 308 yards. Still not throwing the ball deep, but he's only sacked once. Didn't have a ton of pressure in his face, which was a good thing. He even managed to, he did like the Tom Brady, resigned himself to a sack and then nobody touched him. So he did the weird, throw to Nyheim Hines on the boundary, but he wasn't anywhere in the vicinity before he got taken down. if you guys recall that one where he definitely had curled in and like was preparing to be sacked and then realized like, hey, nobody's got me. I guess I can do something. It was an interesting game for Rivers. It was the first one I've really noticed that I thought, man, he just doesn't have a lot of zip on the ball. And it is a little prohibitive, as I've seen it in some situations, but when he's needed it, it seems like he'd been able to put something on it. And this was the first game where I thought, man, he just doesn't have it. I'm not sure he can do that anymore.
I still don't understand how his throwing motion ever produced said zip.
He does look like he's trying to shot put the football, doesn't he?
It's still like, I thought I'd be used to it by now, but every time I see it, like, I throw up a little bit in my mouth. Like, I just,
it's
so unnatural. My body just rejects it instantly.
Well, and so then we did get the first effective sub in play, where you bring in Jacoby Brissett, and this is 1 for 3 where they've had him in. They talked about these Jacoby Brissett plays. So I think it's funny that Philip Rivers is so slow that you have to bring in a sub to actually run a quarterback sneak. he can't do it. And he just can't do and I don't know. Somebody pointed out that it could be due to back issues or whatever. They don't like to run that QB sneak with him, and that's fine. But man, not being able to do that, it's just, I honestly cringed when I saw Brissett was coming in, because both plays that he's been in on previously have been so thoroughly blown up that it was just like, there was unblocked rushers that just have nailed him. And so I'm waiting for something terrible to happen. He did manage to squeak that one in. So finally, Frank Reich got his Jacoby Brissett trick play in. So maybe we can see that go away forever.
I don't know. I'm good with the quarterback sneaks. Just bring him in, let him sneak it up the middle. I'm fine with that.
I'm not sure it's that sneaky if that's the only thing he can do effectively.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Even if teams know that that's coming, it's really tough to stop. I mean, it's just so fast. It's hard. So even if everybody knows it's going to happen,
And you do have Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson right there. Right. That's a pretty formidable group to have shoving bodies out of the way.
Pretty good at them.
Yeah, and he's not a small guy. I mean, he's a pretty big, muscular dude. Yeah. So that probably is, So I don't know. I would be okay if that was the extent of what Jacoby Brissett comes in to do. Yeah. I'd be good with that as well. So, all right. So, as this, I think we could argue, I don't know. I mean, maybe you guys don't agree. I think this was best as far as a team game. This was the Colts' best game of the season, in my opinion, because it was a combination of the most well-rounded, but also against maybe the best team. Is this what this team is, or are we going to see them just kind of fluctuate back and forth? I mean, this is what they could be. But are we seeing them turn a corner? Because one of the things that has been frustrating is that you see guys like Nyheim Hines have a game like this and then get underutilized. And then you see them forcing the ball to somebody like Trey Burton and not getting the ball to these other playmakers. Mo Alie-Cox got targeted more times than Trey Burton, thankfully, in this game. And you know, it actually didn't produce better than it has. So hopefully that's not going to make them think they should not go to Mo Alie-Cox anymore. But I mean, you see some of these guys who are effective being used a little bit more. Do you think that continues, or do you think that we're still going to kind of be this rubber band operation where from week to week, opponent to opponent, the offense is going to struggle and we're going to have inconsistent, unbalanced performances?
So it's tough to know what you're going to get out of the offense just due to the fact that, I talked about it earlier, but the Titans led for the vast majority of this game. And the Colts offense was kind of back and forth in the first half. And then in the second half, it kind of felt like they figured it out, but it took a 17 yard punt, to really get the Colts back into position to score. They score. And then it took a blocked punt and a touchdown, to kind of really get momentum going. And not to mention that this Titans defense isn't very good. I hate to bring everybody down after such a great win, because it's a great win. It's a fun win. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at it and you look at like wins in a pure dominating fashion, even though the score was what it was. This wasn't a dominant win from start to finish. The Colts had spurts where they looked very good. They went on long drives. They held the ball for a long time. Even if they didn't get points because they turned it over on downs, that's fine if you're, you know, it's not fine, but it's fine if you win the game and, you know, you're controlling the clock and you are being dominant. But we didn't see that the whole game. The Colts came out. I think they had a good plan in the second half. But at the same time, that punt, both the punts really changed the way that the Titans were going to call the game for their offense anyway. So, you know, I'm not sure that you can expect to see this kind of a performance out of the Colts every week. It's certainly something I hope that they build on Nyheim Hines' success. I hope that they keep, you know, looking to Michael Pittman Jr. They keep going those guys' way, you know, and really trying to find guys that are having success against the teams that we're playing. But I don't, even as exciting as this win was, and I'm sure that there are going to be a lot of people that are telling you that the Colts have arrived and this is it, they're great. You know, I don't want to be the wet blanket, but at the same time, this wasn't, you know, the 85 Bears defense that we played against. So just for some realism, I think that you can kind of expect to see the Colts kind of still go back and forth on offense. They're going to have games where they look really good, and they're going to have games like this. And it wouldn't surprise me, as much as I hate to say it, is in a couple weeks when we see these Titans again, if it feels like a completely different game and the Titans come out and, you know, the game's a little closer and, you know, maybe the Colts don't get a win. I would hate to see that, but it's possible that happens just due to the nature of how weird Thursday night games are and the fact that they are going to kind of go back and forth on offense.
Yeah.
I guess I destroyed everybody's mood. Sorry, guys.
No, I was waiting for Jim to say something bad about the Titans, and I was just trying not to say, well, that's stupid and the Titans suck and they're going to lose really big next time too. Because I don't feel like that's intelligent analysis. That's just based on the fact that I don't like the Titans and I want that to happen. But I agree. I mean, I was watching this and thinking, I have a feeling the next matchup with the Titans specifically will look very different than this one. Yes, yeah. But I'm not sure that this isn't a little bit more what we can expect for this team from the kind of the backstretch of this season, because the offense has started doing things. They've started steering. I mean, I'm a little frustrated that it's happened this slowly, but I mean, they ran the no huddle. That we've seen that the no huddle was more effective. I shared last week on Twitter a thread of a bunch of Warren Sharp's, I think it was last week or the week before, a bunch of Warren Sharp on Sharp Statistics, a bunch of stats about how much better the Colts have played in the no huddle than as a huddle offense. And we saw them using that to affect this game. And I think that, like you said, they got some breaks and that's always bound to happen, but also they got some performances from guys who haven't had, I mean, you get performances from Michael Pittman that he hasn't had anything like. You get T.Y. Hilton back performing a little better. You get nothing from Marcus Johnson, which is a little odd. And maybe you get something back from him, but you've gotten DeMichael Harris involved in this game every week for the past 3 weeks. So hopefully we're starting to see some of these offensive weapons become a factor, and maybe that takes the pressure off Phillip Rivers. It helps not to have any significant pass rush, and the Titans don't. So obviously Phillip Rivers is going to thrive in something like that. That's not going to be the case over the next few games as we face a team like the Steelers, who is absolutely going to have a nasty pass rush. And so time is going to tell, but this was a big win for the Colts. They needed this win. They're atop the AFC South now. They can really kind of determine their own fate at this point. And the Titans have a tough schedule too. So it's not going to be a picnic for them over the next few weeks. It's not like they've got the first half of the schedule that we had. Now they're facing some tough opponents as well. So they're going to definitely, be kind of hanging on, and the Colts have a chance to kind of take charge of the division. And that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. It's nice to see this offense hopefully start to evolve and blossom a bit. I'm probably more in the Shepherd camp of, I think we're going to see some inconsistency from them still. And I think part of that is also just a lot of these guys are still young And it's a weird year, and we've got some weird and impactful injuries, and so things are still kind of in flux. But even against a, you know, just craptastic defense of the Titans, I think we're going to see a little bit more, hopefully up tempo and keeping the defenses on their toes a bit. If that amounts to actually, you know, being able to complement our defense a bit more, hopefully, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. The Colts did allow a 100-yard rusher for, I believe, the first time this season. Derrick Henry did break 100 yards. That was, if you're going to let somebody do it, Derrick Henry is probably the person you feel the least bad about, making that happen.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the first thing I thought of, and I don't know what this says about me, but in Super Bowl 25, the Giants and Bills played, and the defensive coordinator for that Giants team was none other than Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, that Giants defense was very good. And before the game, Bill Belichick convinced his defense. Apparently, it was like it was met with like a lot of concern that nobody wanted to do it. But Belichick convinced them that they needed to let Thurman Thomas rush for more than 100 yards. And if they did that, they would win the game, because Bill Belichick believed that if they focused on the run game and took the ball out of Jim Kelly's hands, that they could win. Now, I'm not saying that Ryan Tannehill's Jim Kelly, but I am saying that, the Colts did what they had to do. Derrick Henry had a great game. He rushed the ball 19 times for 103 yards, but they really limited what the Titans could do passing the ball. And ultimately it led to, it led to what happened, what we saw out there. The Colts got a lead and Tannehill wasn't able to throw because the Colts were doing everything they could there. So, I don't know what it says about me that I know that random factoid about Super Bowl 25, but there you go.
Yeah, I'm glad that they and you need the team to be flexible about their game plan, and that makes sense. I mean, you wanted to stop Ryan Tannehill in the passing attack, and they didn't allow Derrick Henry to beat them on big plays. I mean, right. Honestly, when Derrick Henry has broken 100 yards against the Colts, oftentimes it seems like those have been in chunks of like 75, and happened at very inopportune points of the game. So. Exciting to see that performance, and going to be excited to see how the Colts. I mean, the Colts have got a long week to prepare and get themselves ready. We'll have more podcast stuff in between now and then, but it's good to come off of a win, good to have a divisional win, and we haven't played. Only one divisional game, I think, at this point, and it was a loss to the Jaguars. So now you've got another game against the Titans in a couple weeks, and then you've still got two games against the Texans, who are trying their best to self-destruct as an organization. And, it's a good evening to be a Colts fan. So glad that we got out with a win, and excited for the coming week to hopefully see some positive results from Kenny Moore, that he's able to be back and healthy, and we'll be getting ready to take on the Packers.
Bring on the Packers.
Yep. Let's
do it. All right, guys. Well, that's all we got for you tonight. You can check out our podcast on whatever, medium that you listen. If you would give us a rating and review, we definitely appreciate it. And haven't asked you to do that for a while, but if anybody feels inclined to do that, it'd be awesome if you did that. You can follow us on Twitter at Chris Blystone, at NFL Scheme, and at Jim Campbell 81. And check out work over at Stampede Blue. There's lots of good stuff going to go up there. We got a little bit of a long week, so we've got more things to talk about. There may be some more film reviews coming up over the extended time period, and get a chance to look at some things. We'll be looking forward to dropping another podcast or probably middle of next week, and kind of taking a look at the Packers and what we can expect to see from them. They've been having a really good year, and Aaron Rodgers is playing like it like he maybe wants to stick it to the team that drafted a first round quarterback. So excited to kind of dig in and see what the Packers look like. And another tough opponent. Colts are going to get a chance to prove themselves over a couple stretches of games. And this was a good start, but we'll see how it ends. And until that point, I think we'll get out of here, guys, because it's it is late and my brain is powering down whether we end this podcast or not. So I think we'll catch you guys later.
Bye.
Later.
We'll be right back.